I really didn't think about how we were going to introduce this thing.
I mean, you can do a...
I'll wing it.
Yeah.
I'll improvise my way through this. And if it's bad, we'll edit something else.
Exactly. In. There's no pressure.
Goodbye and question time. What?
What does that mean?
We do have a bunch of questions that have been sent in by you, the listeners. So we'll dive right into those and hopefully have interesting answers. We have screened almost none of these and done no prep whatsoever because we didn't decide who was who is going to be driving this thing.
Wait a minute. I'm just a guy who's listened to the podcast and never seen any of you people. Who is everyone?
Hey, good idea. Who are you?
Okay.
Identify yourself, man.
I am Alex Colliard, and I play Daryl, the Dust Goblin. Anyone else? Let's just move on. Let's all be the only one to introduce myself.
Let's go to
the question the first.
No, actually, everyone should introduce themselves. Yeah. I think that's good. Yes, no one knows. Not everyone knows what we look like.
I feel like. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true.
Especially for answering questions
actually,
like of our characters.
If that is true, and you don't know what we look like, you should go check out our website where you can also put in a suggestion and see all of our profiles
or the Instagrams or you know. Yeah. Figure it out.
All right, Serena, who are you?
Hi, I'm Serena. Serena Marie. I play Bugfly.
I'm Justine. I play Rhoda, the Dragonborn fighter.
My name is Aram, and I play Bellegarde, the half-orc monk, right?
Yeah. Well, in season one, he's multi-classed. Correct. We do retcon that a little bit, but
just
we'll talk about that in the future.
Yeah.
I'm Pat. I'm the DM.
I'm Carlos. I play Gilf, the sorcerer.
Is that what you are?
What?
How bad would it be if I didn't know what your class was?
24 episodes later, he's just been letting me roll and play and do whatever I want.
I was like, yeah, it works, it counts.
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's hop into the first question. It is an audio submission from Goblin, who we see quite a bit on Twitter as well as I believe in the Discord. So Goblin, thank you so much.
Quick question for everybody. What is your favorite snack or beverage while playing D&D?
Well, today I ate 4 cold french fries in the middle of the...
Waffle fries, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 4 cold waffle fries.
I would have to say coffee. Just coffee and nothing else.
I drink a lot of coffee and Gatorade.
We usually have alcohol at these things, but we haven't had it the last 3 times.
Because we've been starting at 11 a.m. It'd be weird.
Yeah.
We've been doing, daytime. That's true.
Real weird if we start drinking that early.
I'm okay with it.
I usually have like some type of beer or like a Red Bull. We don't really have snacks at the table, though.
Well, I would lose my mind.
Yeah.
That's probably what this was different about this question is if you're just playing D&D, you're snacking down. Yeah. But we're
recording a
podcast.
I got my hands in pretzels all day.
So, yeah. I mean,
there's so many things we can't do because the mics pick up everything.
Yep. Yeah. There's gum on this table right now.
I got yelled at.
Yeah. I wanted to have it so bad.
I didn't yell at you. I just said, if you chew that, I'll lose my mind.
No. That was definitely firm Pat voice. Yeah. Like, in your head, you went, I can't fucking believe he just did that.
Well, come on, dude.
I know.
You are an experienced podcaster popping a piece of gum in your mouth halfway through a recording.
Well, you're completely right.
I guess he's not that experienced. Shots fired. Look, okay, so they won't let me have it, but if I could have my way, I'd have my gamer fuel. Mountain Dew, but you guys have shut that down every time I've brought it.
Mountain Dew?
Yeah,
what are you talking
about? Every time
about?
I bring it, you guys yell at me and you're like, it's too sugary.
Who
yells at you?
I'm pretty sure that's never happened.
This never happened.
No. The only thing I yell about is chewing gum.
You know what? You can go.
I'm just having a goof, you guys. I'm having a fun time.
I love Mountain Dew at the table.
I like Diet Mountain Dew.
Oh, what?
Yeah,
is that okay?
What?
It's like half strength Mountain Dew.
Why half strength though?
It's like mountain without the dew.
What? It's total
it's
dew.
It's hill
less
dew.
Mountain.
if we could have snacks, that
if we could have snacks, like if, Oliver Twist style.
If I was allowed to have snacks,
yeah, what do you crave when we're doing this?
Popcorn always.
Yeah,
popcorn.
Good.
So much popcorn. Mm-hmm. Movie popcorn is my favorite popcorn.
Oh my god, I love chips and dip.
Chips and like French onion dip. Dipper. Oh my gosh.
Also, I haven't eaten all day like besides those French fries.
I just, hey, give me like five different dips. I'm a sauce boss. I want all of the sauces. I want all the dips.
Boss.
And I want a dip.
Am I weird because I want to say spaghetti?
Yes.
Is that weird? Is that weird to have
weird. That's really
weird. Okay.
Oh, one time we ate enchiladas.
Oh, that was really cool.
We did. Yeah. They were wonderful.
That was a good day.
What happened to the enchiladas?
We ate all the enchiladas.
We ate all of them. Yeah. All right. Whatever happened.
Were you like wondering if there was more?
Did you think
like 4 months ago?
It was like December.
I don't know, guys.
They're still in the fridge.
We haven't eaten all day. We have been recording all day and eating nothing.
Yeah,
so,
all of us are starving right now. Yeah.
So thanks for the food question, asshole.
Great question.
Oh,
yeah.
No, it was a great question.
Terrible
that was a good question.
It was good.
I loved it.
Because I got a lot of traction.
Yeah. Hey, Dungeon Rats. So we all have those stories of epic victories of our characters. But what about epic failures? Those stories where either as a player you messed up or the dice gods hated you. The stories your friends still tease you about. What's your favorite one? Mine would be when I destroyed half of my master's army with a misplaced spell. Thanks, Megan. So what she's asking is, at what point have you screwed up so big that you kind of love it and can't shake it?
I'm trying to remember my other.
I mean, you guys
games
have screwed up quite a bit in Dungeon Rats.
Well, I'm trying to remember something that wasn't in Dungeon Rats because I'm sure they've heard it. But but also, I mean, I think that's totally fine to recount like what our biggest failure in the podcast has been.
On the Twitch stream, I killed Rot. Who did I kill?
You killed Chan
before he was evil though, right?
Well, you kept insisting that he was evil.
But you were like the only one.
You were the only one that wanted him
so
dead.
So I was right, right?
We'll never know now because you killed him.
So I killed him, but he revived him.
Did I save Rot on the stream?
It was either Rot or some other guy.
No, Chan, this is where it gets super weird. Chan and Rot switched bodies. Chan was Chad's talking hand. Rot was just this goblin that you guys punched all
okay.
the time.
Okay, Chan went into Rot's body and I killed Rot.
Right.
I killed Chan Rot.
You killed Chan the goblin body.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
And Chan was super evil because all Chan did was stab everything.
Exactly. Mm. And I got so much shit for that, like on the Twitch stream. But I was right, so. I don't know what that is.
I mean, I guess I had like the biggest failure of all in the beginning when I rolled. It was a critical fail on my javelin throw. To save what I thought was Gilf. We've kind of explained this, but there was a king situation, and we were trying to steal the amulet.
Oh yeah,
right. This is what happened, and Gilf disguised himself as the king to trick everyone in the royal like guard.
Yeah, I always meant to ask you about this one.
Well, and so I thought, because I think, oh god, what was happening?
What was your end game?
Because I was throwing the javelin at like the leader of the guard.
Oh
yes, that's and this is what happened
is
I rolled a critical fail, and so Pat decided it hit the king.
Okay, because whenever
which I thought was you,
yeah,
I thought I killed you because I like was like I know that you're disguised, but I didn't see that the real king had returned.
That's what it was,
and so that was one of the biggest failures that I guess like is the whole reason why we're in the dungeon.
Oh yeah, I because that is part of our legends,
yes.
Things that aren't necessarily canon. But I use that as the impetus as to why you were sentenced to the Endless Dungeon, is that time you tried to steal the amulet and murdered the king, which you did. Yep. And you murdered the queen.
Yep.
And
we were supposed, I mean, she was
she
trying to kill
the
us.
She murdered
the
princess,
so.
Though.
Maybe. It's a legend. It doesn't count as true canon.
Even though we lived it. It's a legend.
Although we did play it, but the characters were different then too.
Yeah,
and we were
sure.
just working it out. That is like the origin of this and why it kind of seems a little weird sometimes where we actually start is because those are on the Making New Friends feed.
Mm.
Because I was just throwing them up there as we were testing stuff out and experimenting before we even knew what the show was.
Making New Friends, for anyone listening, Making New Friends is a podcast that Patrick had. Is it still going on?
Or
you guys end it? Yeah, so... If you guys dig around,
too many friends.
They made all the friends. Yeah. If you guys dig around on Google, Making New Friends, Patrick O'Rourke.
You don't need to do that.
Oh, it's done already.
You guys had a lot of funny episodes.
Yeah, it was good. And we did like 300 episodes, and then I was tired of doing it. It's frankly why we stopped. Yeah, and so we had put it up there because we were still testing out what we wanted to do.
Yeah, test plane.
Yeah, the cast was almost all there, though, just no Aram, because Aram didn't even live in Chicago yet.
I did not. I was still in D.C.
Yeah.
Aram, you play a ton of D&D, yes?
All the time.
So what's your biggest failure? Do you have one that can point out?
Before God's Fall, I had never, ever DM'd a successful game. Not a single time.
Do you mean, really? What does that mean?
But, yeah.
They mean they were catastrophic failures. The last two D&D games I tried were such failures. The first one, I ended up walking away from the friend group. The second one, they walked away from me.
So two friendships were ended?
Destroyed.
You're talking about destroyed.
You guys got it wrong. Two groups of friendships.
Groups of friendships.
This is a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, completely. That led to a 10-year gap between playing D&D again. I skipped the entire fourth systems. I didn't play any role-playing games. I just walked away from the hobby, even though I played it since I was like 7.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. And then God's Fall worked. Thank goodness. Yeah. And, you know, it's been good.
I mean, it's still going on. Something
right,
could
fall apart at any time.
Jesus, wow. You've ruined every single connection you have with
so
a human.
I'm so glad you joined us.
Oh, just wait, like, tick, tick, tick.
Yeah,
tick.
Jesus Christ. Well, he's not DMing this one. That's we went right.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I'm just playing, so there's not as much pressure. Now the tomb people are fucked.
Yeah, you'll be deported at the end of that one.
I was born here.
Yeah, you were born here. What do you guys got?
So in Arizona, I used to LARP, so like live action role play. And I had a friend who I was supposed to be like this ringer because like I know improv and I was supposed to be very good at this game that he wrote. And I was supposed to, you know, like invite other people in. But I got rolled because it's like a LARP. So you have like there's no exact rolling, but like there's a contract mechanic in the game. So I got rolled about like 30 minutes into the game and ended up drinking poison and like died like right in the beginning of the LARP.
Oh wow.
Just like Jesus. Yeah. So that was fun. And that was like my first real improv was LARPing before I took classes in Chicago.
Oh cool.
Yeah.
That's fun. I guess mine would be when we were first setting up a premise. Like well before we were setting up a premise when we were just starting to play. And I decided to make crabs fall in love to defeat them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I do not remember that.
I'm pretty sure everyone was like, why is she on this show?
Oh, yeah. I still wonder that every time. Just kidding. You know,
because
you know.
We use my house.
Yeah. Oh, that is why.
You're
right.
So good on this show.
Okay.
This table is so big.
Now at all.
For all the podcast listeners, that's Justine knocking the die all over the place.
Yeah.
Cool. Next question.
Yeah.
All right. It's another audio question from Blake Ryan.
This is Blake Ryan from Australia. I am Bellegarde, half-orc paladin, condemned for the sins of my past. Welcome to God's Fall. Just wondering, will Gylf ever get a sort of fleshed-out backstory? Like, is he getting a sibling visit or something? Will any of the earlier characters return, like Troon or the cat-eating dragon? And will Darrell ever get, like, a holy quest or an unholy nemesis?
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, number one, I think before anything, is you need to start talking in an Australian accent. Way better.
To prepare when we kick you out of this country.
So there were several questions there. Yeah.
So first, I want to
say...
Let's
make sure we...
Yeah, first is Gylf's question.
Spoil everything that's going to happen in season two.
First, I just want to say thank you for doing the impression. That's great. That might have been from the voicemail.
Oh, yeah, it is from the voicemail.
Yeah, so he called the voicemail, and he left that message. So on the voicemail message asked for his favorite impression. So that's what he was doing on there. So I want to say thank you for doing that. I fucking love it when you guys interact with us. So that's it.
Cool. Well, then you have a question.
Yeah, they have a question. No, I just, that's
which
the first
I guess
thing
is,
I
that's
is,
it. Let's move on.
So will Gylf's backstory ever be explored? We've talked about this quite a bit.
Yeah, I think season two... So we've already played two sessions for season two, and it starts like his backstory kind of starts right off the bat. Not so much explaining it, but just like little hints on what's going on in Gylf's life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think season two, I don't know what's planned on it, but if it happens, it happens. We kind of, I know what it is. You guys don't know what it is. Sorry.
I know. And I do.
I know what it
no,
is.
No, you don't.
I definitely do. Yeah. And the way I always look at backstory is, how can you integrate it in ways that help with the overall narrative of what we're doing for the season or the overall arc of what's going to happen in Naporia? That's why Bellegarde's backstory came out the way it did, because it was actually very important to explaining the structure of the government of Naporia. If it becomes really important, details about every character's backstory will come out. If it's something that doesn't guide the bigger story, we'll continue to hint at it, and basically players will reveal that as they're comfortable and feel the need to. Because not every person, when you meet somebody, I don't go like, hey, Alex, did you know when I was 14 I was teased a lot? Yeah. Like, you don't introduce yourself
that
way.
Can we hear more about that?
That yeah. I really want to. Yeah, were that you was teased a lot? That was 100% real. He didn't write that backstory. It was written for him.
But point remains, when you interact with people, you don't learn their backstory in like big drops, unless it's relevant right. to what's happening. And so I try to keep that in my games.
Second question?
Will characters come back?
Yeah, like Troon and
Dottie the Dragon.
Well, Troon is Austin Campion, and he currently lives in North Carolina, I think.
Yeah, he moved.
He moved to somewhere.
But
we're really good friends.
Austin and I have talked about, he does have a recording setup within his house. His girlfriend, fiance,
yeah,
his partner.
But that's so unfortunate that he's still never gonna return to the show in any capacity. Yeah, super sucks.
Oh wow. Yeah. Did you guys have a falling out?
Yeah, I refuse to let him. So even if you had anything planned, unwrite it.
unwrite it.
Yeah. I'll stop talking to him in any way.
Yep.
But I don't know if Troon will be with the main party ever again. I don't think that's
what
wow.
is going on there.
Sorry.
Classic Dungeon Rats. I don't know if Troon will ever be back with the main party. I just don't know if that's feasible, but right. will he make an appearance on the podcast in a future season or so? I don't know.
Yeah.
Great answer.
Sure sounds like you do.
Yeah. Orlin, will Orlin make it back?
Yes.
Oh, that was right away.
I mean, shit.
Yeah.
I was playing. I was playing coy with Troon. Yeah. I should have played coy. Troon's more difficult because Austin moved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex, because he's such a shitty character. I mean,
also Austin was so demanding.
Yeah, he was really demanding and hard to play with, and like wasn't supportive or like funny or good. Anyway, yeah, miss him. Actually, can I just say, I don't know if the episodes where it's mentioned have come out, but Opossum Stoles is his. Like he like listened to his episode and he like made a comment about it off like in his voice, not in character.
Yeah.
And he used that great pun.
Yeah, the remix is better though.
Well, what I mean, is he specifically asked me, please, you have to say that at some point because they cut it out of the episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was probably some like
probably
banter that
was
unable.
Funny.
It probably wasn't funny how he said it.
He has really bad delivery. Can you talk about that?
Oh my God.
Can you talk about that? He was the hardest person to edit.
So hard.
I had to get one of those like voice programs to like get him to actually speak properly. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
But
we're
he
joking.
Did ask me to please
say
it.
I feel like
say
people
it,
aren't
so
gonna
I,
know that.
I'm,
yeah.
not, joke
I'm not joking at all.
He's joking.
You
He's
are joking.
Joking. Everybody's
no,
joking.
I'm not.
He's joking.
We have an Aram situation with that guy. I'll talk. I told him,
well, Troon
come
did,
back in 10 years. Okay?
My experience is completely different because Troon did the backstory episode.
Oh, yeah.
That was like, it was like one take Tony. Is that the phrase?
One take Tony. Yeah, that's
oh my
for
God.
Sure.
Yeah, that's
phrase.
What everyone says.
Everybody says that. Mm-hmm.
One take
I basically
Tony.
Put 7 pages in front of him and he flew through it. It was amazing.
He's a classically trained actor, I think. I don't know.
No, he's the voice at the planetarium.
Yeah, he's the voice at the planetarium.
You guys come to Chicago Planetarium, you could hear Troon's voice.
Is it the same character?
No, no.
Welcome to the planetarium.
And then it goes, oh.
All right, should we move on to the next question or were there more?
No, I think that's
that was it.
There's
that
one
was
more question.
NPCs or
the last question was, does Daryl have go on a holy quest
oh,
or have
yes.
an unholy
oh, yes.
enemy?
Have a, yeah,
I don't know. Listen to the end of season one. we can't really.
Yeah.
Like I guess ideally he's always on a quest, but I don't know. well, you know, stuff happens.
I mean, gotta play coy.
Gotta play coy. This is a very big spoilers kind of question that we kind of have to be careful about.
Also, your entire life is one big quest. Yeah. I mean, you clearly present it as you are on this path every moment, every waking second that you walk the earth.
Yeah. I suppose, like, the way it's been in the episodes that have been released, it is very much like a personal quest of just trying to figure it out. Because he's not, like, the greatest follower of as of now. As the, I don't know, tenants of the possum god go, he has moments of weakness and... You know.
You're really good at believing what you believe.
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
I know, right?
All right, next question. Any advice for control freaks who want to play D&D? This is either players and DMs. On how to not lose your mind when other people dare to contribute. And this is from Hazel Tate.
Wow, what a question.
When other people dare to contribute?
So I think it's when people, how to relax a little bit and not be a control freak at the table.
Mm. How not to railroad your table is the question that's been asked.
Well, as a player or a DM.
Yeah, yep. Carlos, why don't you answer that? Oh. I'm just kidding.
Wait, what?
I'm just kidding.
I mean, as far as contribute goes, is for me, as long as other people are contributing, like, I'm fine with it. It's when maybe there's like sniper type thing going on where like people kind of just wait in the shadow because they want to do like I've been at a table where this one guy just wanted to steal the like all the time and he wasn't really contributing to the game. And when he was saying things or role play, like it was really the game was really low on like role playing as well, which I feel like does not help. Like, if you're playing a game that's just, like, all about move, and not about, like, what emotion is causing that, like, people at the table are kind of going to be like, well, what the fuck, man? Like, you didn't have... They don't understand the reason for it. So, like, that's my only thing. When people don't give a reason, I don't care if people are contributing. That seems like the best case scenario.
Yeah, I'm a big control freak in a way. I used to be, and so I super loved doing like collaborations, but I think it was more to like get validation from everyone for my good ideas. And yeah, no, seriously. And then like with like improv, it kind of tore the walls down of that, where it was like, when I have an idea and people don't like it, or when someone else has an idea and I don't like it, instead of just putting a wall up and being like, no, that's not what I was thinking, I just try to be like, well, wait, what can I add to that to make it my thing as well? Mm-hmm. And it's not about like stealing it and being like, now this is mine. It's about being like, yeah, like as long as we can keep building things, like that's what makes it feel like it's your game, it's our game, instead of just Pat's game or Carlos's game.
Being
or
able
anyone
to let go of those ideas too, when you're like, oh, well, that totally messed up what I've been sitting here thinking about the entire time.
Yeah.
Being able to just like let that go will help your game 110%. Because what happens is like you just keep thinking of ways to save your idea, your cool idea that honestly you couldn't do and you couldn't make happen. Because like you're not the only one playing this game, you know. Like
I think that's it right there. Is like that's not what this game is.
Yeah.
It's not that it's your idea. What you are is reacting to every single thing that happens. So as long as you go into it with that mindset, people contributing is just the game happening, and so now you're playing the game, and you have to be excited about reacting.
And you like writing. Your first thought when you're writing any draft is never your best thought. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So when you're DMing a game or you're playing, if someone can give you that like gift of something else, it's like a discovery moment. You're like, oh, yeah, like let's see where this goes, because it'll be just so much different than what you initially thought. And I think that's delightful.
As the most experienced tabletop gamer here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listen to me. I'm just kidding. I actually was just going to defer over to back to Pat or no Ram, because they've played a lot more games. And honestly,
well,
like, I
think.
But
well, what do you think? Yeah.
What do I think about like how to not be controlling or
when people,
or if you feel your ideas got stolen?
I think it comes back to like knowing what your motivation is for doing something. And typically for me, when I have a specific idea that I want to do, I will find a way to make it work. Despite what happened, even if what had happened was unexpected, it might just happen in a different way. But I think that a lot of that comes from like an improv and acting background and choosing to be reactionary as opposed as to like on the front end of that.
Well, I'm really interested to hear if Aram has anything to say about this as someone who, the only one here who is not like, does not claim to be an improviser. You're an improviser now because
like
you've done the show.
Liver. I mean,
I've learned some things. Yeah. I've learned a little bit, but I don't think I've learned a lot.
You do. You're a natural improviser. For
I
sure.
appreciate that. Yeah. Right. But I'm like, still scared all the time.
But I mean, we're all coming at it from an improv thing of being like, oh, you know, we've learned to stop control, but like you're,
that's helped me the most, actually. Yeah. This is the quietest table I've ever been at. So this is the least crosstalk. This is the least stepping on each other. This is the most listening of any table I've ever been at because so many people in D&D aren't classically trained improv people. This is finally this is the perfect storm of recording this kind of game because you all stop and you all listen and you all focus on each other and try to understand exactly what's happening because you want to react in the moment. So I would say that this is the best example that I've ever seen. As a DM, it's also taught me a lot more about stepping back. When we're doing Tomb, I've used Carlos to basically play 24 NPCs so I can talk less. Whenever someone's taking an action, I will sit back and be like, describe your action, and then just shut up because it's a far more effective way of being a DM. So it's taught me an incredible amount.
I think that's really it. As the DM, you have no control. Everybody says you're like the god and you can control the world. You control nothing. But what you can do is set up the sandbox in a way that's fun to play in. And if your players are playing in it and doing whatever they want and it's exciting things, you've done it well, and you should be happy that that's what they're doing versus like, well, geez, they were supposed to do this by now. They never will. It will never happen. Yeah. And I hate to say it, but playing the game wrong as a DM,
you are.
If you expect to have any level of control.
Yep.
Players do what they do.
Yeah, it seems like DM acts more like gravity than God, right? Like, yes. It's just like,
yes.
You, like, it's hold perfect. On, you want to do this thing? Well, that technically isn't possible, or like you roll it, it's not possible, like that kind of thing. Instead of just like, I don't want it to be possible, rip you apart.
Well, and you hear a lot of DMs run into trouble with that because one would be the way they write their world. So they write it as a linear story versus a world. That's why it's called world building. And, you know, if you read the Dungeon Master's Guide and stuff, there's a way to doing this. You're building maps and kingdoms much more so than you're building storyline. Your players are driving storyline. And this is, I guess, where like the training comes in or whatever, but characters matter, then plot matters, then the world matters. No one's going to care about your world if they don't care about the characters within it. So those pieces all build on each other to make it all seem magical and huge, but you got to give the characters the ability to be who they are and give them all of the tools to do that. And a high part of that, or an important part of that, is listening to what your characters are saying and then introducing little hooks later, if you didn't think of it within that adventure, to give them something to grab onto. And then you can kind of help drive the story in the direction you want because you know what your player is going to jump on or expect them to jump on. They, you know, again, they do whatever they want. But it's not a sense of control. It's a sense of assembly.
Well, there's been a few times after we've gotten done recording that you've been like, well, we didn't go down that road at all. Yeah, I guess I will throw this work away.
Oh yeah,
and then I always feel kind of bad that I was like, oh, sorry.
Yeah,
it's good to be done anyway. But I think you build the same way I do. It's got to be done because the world's got to be big. You could go left, you go right, you go north. You could take a ship for 3 days. If we have no idea where that ship lands, where that wagon train goes, the world just crumbles. It's got to be a stage everywhere. It can't just be like a spotlight appears where you are and then a town evolves around it.
Yeah. I think another good thing, if you ever feel stuck, if you ever feel like, oh, well, I had this thing planned and someone contributed and now we're going a completely different direction. Or you feel stuck like, oh, now I can't use my investigation that I'm so good at, or I can't use my history that I'm so good at. Look at that sheet, man. It is huge. And there's tons of things that you can be doing that you might naturally not think of doing. Like, there's, like, you might be thinking, oh, well, I want to do an investigation because I want to know this, this, and that. But, you know, there could be other people in that room. And you could be doing an insight instead, you know. You could be doing some sleight of hand and trying to get some information by picking pockets. There's, like, tons of stuff that you can be doing. And it's a misconception that you think that, like, oh, there's only one thing that should be happening right now, like, that you're focused on, one thing to, like, accomplish this type of goal, one thing that happens, like, that sheet is huge, and you could be tapping into every single resource you can.
It's just a world that we all get to play in. Yeah. It's like the real world.
Yeah.
And that's why I write pages and pages and pages of stuff. It also is because if you say something to me that I didn't expect, I have a long list of things to pull from to throw in.
Yeah.
And there's times, and I'm not going to say when because I'm a great DM.
So modest.
No, but all DMs do this. I wrote a thing 3 weeks ago that you skipped. You guys chose a direction that I did not expect. That thing you skipped is what you run into, right? Like,
yeah.
I act like it was supposed to be there the whole time.
Yeah.
But I'm using it. I use previous material that works within the setting to like, well, I had no idea they were going to ride the boat for 3 weeks, but thank God I wrote a water encounter a month ago because that's going to save my butt right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
You just throw it in.
That makes a lot of sense. I just love the parallel of, because like, you know, I'm a comedy writer and like writing sketches for like a show, like a sketch show is maybe like 15 sketches or something, but like 30, 40 sketches are written and so many are cut. And that's like kind of actively happening, where the players are cutting all of those sketches that you wrote without even knowing that they're cutting them.
Yeah.
And it's just like you have to know that you're going to have more ideas. You're going to have more things that are going to happen to you. None of the stuff that you think of is precious. It's great. You're really good. But like, you're going to have more.
Yeah,
and you'll
totally.
Always have more unless you're dead.
You're right. And if you don't have more, you should stop DMing.
Yeah,
right?
Then what are you doing?
Well, then why are you playing this game? Because it seems like it's a lot of work and not that fun.
Take a break for 10 years. ended thousands of friendships. Yeah.
But I can understand that, too. I get why DMs, they'll go on long breaks because either you've run out of fantasy stories to tell, you've written a lot of encounters, and you get tired. It happens.
It took me 9 months to write God's Fall before we played a single game.
I was so stressed out. I was so stressed out about season two because I was like, I don't know how season one happened, but it felt magical. Sure hope I can get that, make that happen again or usher that in. All right. Next question.
Yes.
Good day, rats. Greetings from the Northlands. I see you have survived both my statue of Rickard of Asland as well as the fraternals of Beta Omega Omega Beta Sigma. I wish you well in that regard. Here, I am leaving you a message for each of you. And then some. In no particular order. Bellegarde, what are your thoughts about butt gnomes, fratnels, as well as kitties?
All right, so
I think you have to do it in character.
Yeah.
So Bellegarde, what?
The
what is your opinion on butt gnomes?
Are fine. They're actually kind of great. I kind of miss them. As far as what was the second one?
Fratnels.
Fratnels can all die painfully and extended if possible. Kitties are great. Kitties make everything better. And the more kitties, the better. I do miss Dottie and her kitty. That was the best part of our adventure.
Bugfly, what is the weirdest non-food object you've eaten?
25 spoons.
Okay.
Who had named you Bugfly? Or did you choose that name yourself?
If I'm going to be honest, it's both. Both yes and no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Always a great non-answer.
The answer is maybe.
Where's the spaghetti?
To Daryl, did you choose the pouch, or did the pouch choose you? Also, what's with you impulsively trying to punch things or people? What's with that, really?
The pouch chooses us all, and we then have a choice to reject it. Those who reject it are always welcome back in when they are ready, and those who choose to accept it will feel its warmth for an eternity. As far as impulsively punching things, it's just I've got a lot of things going on internally and sometimes I can't control them and it just comes out. And, you know, I'm around a lot of strong guys like Rhoda and Bellegarde and they got these big muscles and I wish I had the big muscles. Sure, I use the word guys in a non-gendered term and I'm sorry about
like
that. Look, okay, there's a lot of things going on inside me and I'm really sorry about the punches. I'm trying to get those under control. I think I punched a bush once.
It turned out to be a small halfling.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Rossdale.
To Gilf, how does it feel being the only sane person in the group? Also, why are you such a freaking wet blanket? Jeez.
I feel like I feel like they didn't want the answer to that question.
Living up to his expectation here.
I feel like maybe if you didn't have that last part, we could be best friends. But at this point, I don't even know how I feel about you, Melna.
Great question, Melna.
Rhoda, how's that zone of friendship from Bellegarde? And what's wrong with being a potato? Seriously, potatoes are great.
What's with the zone of friendship?
Wait, no, that's with Rhoda.
It's Rhoda. So you cast zone of friendship on her.
Remember, right. Like my husband, and right. It's just like my friend.
Well, I mean,
the friendships.
Yeah,
Bellegarde's like, gay as fuck.
that would be the answer.
No, it's Rhoda's question.
It's a question for Rhoda.
Yo, I vaguely remember being sort of in love with Bellegarde when I first met him. But then all of a sudden, I was just like, let's just be friends. And I don't know what changed. Did he put me in the friend zone?
Zone of friendship.
What?
It's a zone of friendship.
The zone of friendship? Everything seems so mild here.
I appreciate him as a person.
He's a good dad to others.
It is a good question, though. What is wrong with being a potato?
Yeah.
I think there's...
You called Camille.
Lots of people potatoes, and it was like, you got really angry that maybe you were called a potato.
I'm not a potato. You're a potato.
You're a potato, Camille.
You asked her if she ate potatoes. It's like, did you eat a bad potato?
You do seem kind of mad at potatoes.
Because you get this way when you have bad potatoes. And then Camille's like, you're a bad potato. Oh, that's right, yeah. And then you guys just kept yelling at each other, calling each other bad potatoes.
I think, right. Yeah.
But that's a backstory question.
We just...
Right? Is that a backstory question?
Look, Rhoda, we just want you to clarify your stance on potatoes. Do you hate all potatoes? Like, what's going on with potatoes in you?
I think that says it all, guys.
Well, potatoes... There's lots of foods in the world that you could be that could be better.
Fair.
That's fair.
Very political. Very politician-like.
Personally, I meant that politically.
Rhoda 2020.
Rhoda 2020.
To the Dungeon Master. So what does your office look like since you're more or less trapped in there? And what keeps you from leaving the office if your prospective monsters and guests can come in and out without issue?
Oh god, that's a good question.
Very good question.
Well, first of all, it's a great office, best office in the building. It's clean. I keep it clean. I got books that I read at night when I sleep there.
Oh, you sleep there too?
Someone's in denial.
He's never left. He's never seen the sun.
I don't leave. It's not only my office, it's my home, and it's a glorious one at that.
You even have a place to die?
I have a corner to die in.
Your death corner.
Ships and bottles full of little people. They keep me company when it gets especially lonely.
Is there still a bag of puppies?
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of puppies. They slowly starve to death and die.
Oh my goodness.
But as soon as one dies, I pour another one out of the bag and I'm happy again. And why do I never leave? Because I'm chained to the desk.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Wait, follow up on that. You've never seen the sun.
Nope.
So were you born at your desk?
No, I think it's established canon that it's been a very long time since I've seen the sun.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The desk is actually his mother.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
It's metaphorical.
Now we're getting to some weird Bates situation.
Also, I'm not a wet blanket.
Finally, Rot for the Neo Hidden Blades.
Yes!
Hidden Blades.
The Neo Hidden Blades.
Yes. Those are my followers.
Yeah. Was that is that actually like established?
Oh, yeah. Rot's army is forming. Follow me on Twitter at Rot, a.k.a. Chan, and join my army as we destroy the dungeon rats.
All right, next question.
Hey there, y'all. I'm Nico V. A handful of you might know me as Queerly Departed, and my question was originally going to be, what is your favorite parts of playing with each other? But now I'm vaguely concerned that Rod is menacing y'all in your homes. But for real, the question is, what are your favorite parts of playing with each other?
You guys want to take a break on this one? Just take a quick 20?
First things first. Jesus. Yes, I am.
My, okay, let's see. My favorite thing about playing with everyone? Well, one, I've never really played with anyone before this show, and now I feel super comfortable with everyone. Everyone has very different playing styles, which is super great. It could definitely not be that way if everyone was all like the same, and I don't know, some people are like better at making references and some people are better at just like saying really weird shit at the perfect time, and you know, some people don't do improv at all, and that's great. Right. It's always great. And I don't know, I just think the dynamic, there's like all like these holes are being filled by everyone in different capacities.
Yeah, I think that I feel really supported when we all play together, and that, you know, kind of going back to maybe even taking the lead and not taking the lead, is like everybody is so encouraging that like whenever we're playing and one of us is trying to do something that seems like really weird, it's like everybody just figuring out how to make it happen as opposed to trying to figure out to redirect it. So I think that the constant support and work that everybody puts into the game, I think is like, it, that's what makes it really enjoyable for me. Not that you guys are cool.
My favorite part about this group is also like our how much we embrace failure. Like, it's not really about playing the game correctly or winning the encounter. It's like story first, game second, and which it just makes it so much more fun to really figure out who these characters are outside of, like, you know, the game structure.
Yeah, that I, in games that I've played before, like being able to feel free to make character moves over game moves, mm-hmm. because making character moves sometimes are very stupid moves.
Yeah.
And that is like super important to be like, oh, I feel like I can say this like thing that's probably like a bad move, because I know that people are going to be like, yes, great character move, that sucks for me, but like, good job. Like, that is super great. I like that.
That is very different from most gaming tables as well. The majority of gamers expect you to try to play the game, or that for your characters to be somewhat wholly competent. The fact that we are willing to fail so often, I think, really underlines who the characters are and does make them more real for everyone.
Yeah, I find that the balance of that is like, you're going to be really smart in one place, so you kind of got to be bad at something else.
Absolutely.
You know, just to balance yourself out. Like, in everyday life, you might be good at this, but like, you're kind of bad at that. And what are like the possibilities of like that actually happening? It's like, you got to play both sides of that. What I love about the table is that in improv, there's this one group mind theory that like a bunch of people doing the same thing will kind of have the same ideas. And it's like in improv, it's a magic one group mind. It's like totally magical in improv. So we have those moments a lot in our game when we're all on the same page. You'll hear it in the podcast where we're all just kind of thinking the same thing. And it could be something really simple or like kind of complicated, but we're all on the same page. And it's something that we kind of don't notice in the moment. But then afterwards, when we listen to those episodes, we're like, holy shit, we all knew what was happening. We all knew what was going on at the same time. And those are magical moments that you get in games and you get in improv. We're lucky enough that we get to play like 3-4 hour sessions with that feeling. When in improv, you get like, you know, 5-minute scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like at this table, you can get like a good 3-4 hours of it. And it's like a fucking drug sometimes.
Yeah.
I have two thoughts. The first one is definitely the player's commitment to role playing, I think, is beautiful, and that's something that we've all hit on. I play a whole lot of D&D. I play a lot of like podcast recorded role playing games. Kind of like, because there's definitely a difference between playing a game, which like I play with my family all the time, and we're just playing a game together, goofing around. It's a lot more mechanics focused, tactics focused stuff. I really love about Dungeons and Dragons that this table, and for the sake of style, we don't necessarily get into, like, I've never flanked you with a group of orcs as you are looking one direction in a certain marching order. Mm-hmm. And that's also not very exciting to listen to.
Yeah, and it's horrible when you're actually playing that type of game too. I played a game where I rolled a perception, an arrow flew by, I rolled a perception, and I'm like, I look around and I rolled a perception. The guy's like, you don't see anything. And I rolled like a 19 or something like that.
Oh wow.
And then after the game, I was like, so where'd that come from? And he's like, well, there's goblins in the trees that were like, you said you looked around.
Oh, see, that's bull.
Well, that's
that
is a bad,
that DM is a bad call.
In because trees. It's fun. There's certain, yeah. I mean, Dungeons & Dragons is originally a war game.
Yep.
So there's certain war elements, combat elements to the game that if you really embrace are really fun. But we would need like a mini map laid yep. out, and it's a style of playing that we don't do
minis
here.
Minis and markers and everything that we don't use here. Plus, no, it doesn't translate well for audio because you because it makes you lazy. You don't explain those moves yeah. if you can push a little piece
right.
around.
Mm-hmm. But we more than make up for any degree of that using the mechanics of this game that I do love in the role-playing aspects of it. I mean, in today's recording session alone, how many times were we rolling against each other for persuasion versus yeah. intelligence?
Yeah.
And that's like the role-playing mechanics of the game being integrated in, and everyone committing to that really hard, and I love that. That mirror scene that we did, gosh, several episodes ago, is probably one of the best moments of role-playing I ever got to be a part of.
Wow. Agreed.
Yeah, and I've, again, played hundreds of games. I don't even want to count. It's sad. I live in a fantasy world more than I live in the real world.
Yeah.
But that has to be one of the greatest. It's top two, if not the best.
I would completely agree.
My second thing is, y'all act like those failures are on purpose. Come on. You guys are sitting over here rolling ones.
Yeah.
That wasn't a role-playing choice.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
the game.
Yeah.
You fail sometimes because you're bad at the game.
Yeah, but also
but we embrace it. But you're like, good with it.
And you embrace the gamble, too. Because I know like I've played with other people, and like there's moves that I was like, oh, that would be really cool, but risk versus reward plays a lot in hand when you play with other people.
Yep.
Like here, I mean, it does, but like we're not afraid to take those risks, I feel like, as opposed to like today, who's doing so? Who did some? Yeah, what you did something
gotta
weird.
Keep
spoiler.
Yeah, sorry. How can I explain it? That it was just like
some good role playing.
Yeah,
happened.
Some good role playing happened.
Well, I think it helps too that we really care about our characters and we're not just like playing to stay alive or win.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that I think that we all, I mean,
we all generally like
Bugfly
our characters.
Cried the other day.
Yeah.
Like, legit cried about something.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings.
I won't say what it was.
And
no, it's true. And it was as a DM watching a player cry in a good way. It's an amazing moment because you're like, wow, somebody has bought into this world so hard that it drew that sort of emotion. It's great. And you don't. That's magic, guys. And I don't want to praise you too much, but that doesn't really...
Yeah, keep it coming.
That's not common. We just went to Gen Con where everyone's complaining about like their DM or their players and how do I deal with this and how do I deal with that? And you're like...
We're so lucky.
We never deal with any of that.
Yeah. There's so many other DMs with so many other podcasts and I've never seen a unity, even I think within my own group, I've never seen... this way to share and the way that you guys work together. And there's just this natural instant cohesion that I have really seen only once in like 37 years of role playing.
We're all individuals, but like together, it's this chemistry that's formed that is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
And you couldn't just throw any combination of improvisers because we do to a degree define ourselves as improvisers. The alchemy is not always the same. It's not just that skill. It's the people who bring it.
100%.
And people that I never knew before are now my family.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of us really knew each other before, which is crazy.
It was a perfect welcome for me to, you know, I had no friends here, didn't really know anyone, and then I met all of you, all
at once. You still don't have any friends here. I'm just kidding. We love you.
All right, next question. Are we done being sappy? Because if I start crying, I'm going
to... I'm going to cry.
No, do it.
Hi, Dungeon Rats. My name is Kelly. I'm from Idaho, and my question in my Darrell voice is, what is it exactly that drew you all to play Dungeons & Dragons? Thank you so much, and I love your podcast.
It's so good.
That
so
was
good.
Really good.
That was
great.
Good. That was good.
In his Darrell voice.
So what drew you all to play Dungeons & Dragons?
Should we all answer in Darrell voices?
Yes. Everyone except Darrell, who should do Bugfly.
You want me to go first?
I can go first. It's probably the easiest for me to answer. I listened to a lot of actual plays for a long time and was really interested in playing role-playing games.
In Darrell's voice, please.
Oh.
I was really interested.
No, 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 no,
regular voice.
Is my voice that bad?
It's really bad.
I
killed
the whole bit.
It's really fucking bad.
I don't want to think about other people having to do that voice.
But I've been really interested in it. And then the very first time I ever played a role-playing game was actually Pathfinder on the very first episode of the One Shot podcast. And I played a fighter because I didn't, you know, newer players tend to play fighters because it's the easiest one to wrap your head around because, you know, you don't have like a million spells and stuff to choose from. But after that, I was hooked and I just started playing all the time. And then it started with Pathfinder just because I had heard that Dungeons & Dragons lost its way with 4th edition. Since, though, I've been able to play 4th edition, and if you like tactical war games, 4th edition isn't that bad. You just have to be really into tactical war games.
Let's talk about that.
Guys,
about
tactical war games. Answering this question. I need 45 minutes. I'll take a nap. But no, I just started avidly playing, and then once I discovered 5th, I fell in love with it. I think it's the perfect balance for me. I need rule systems. If you play like a fiasco or these really rule light systems, I get bored because let's just do improv together. Yeah. So I love the balance between both being able to role play and then an actual system that binds the world together. And now with 5th, my little brother started playing it. We started playing a family game that I mentioned earlier. I play it with friends all the time. People come up to me and be like, hey, can you please teach X how to play 5th? And I'm like, yeah, when? Let's do it right now. So
before I started playing Dungeons & Dragons, I played a lot of a White Wolf. And so I played like Vampire and Mage and Werewolf and Changeling. Changeling was like my favorite, The Lost, that one. But I had a friend group back in Arizona and it was just like that camaraderie and all of that. And so when Carlos had the idea of playing Dungeons and Dragons, or he was really interested in it, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, I would love to play games with my friends, my new friends. I haven't met them. I'm excited. Like, so it's just, for me, it was like the social aspect of it and just bonding over games together.
I was 7 and my babysitter wanted me to shut the fuck up. Oh. That's how I started playing. I was hooked instantly. I literally borrowed his box, and by the time he babysat for us again, I'd written an entire group of characters. My brother played a little bit, he's like 5. So, but no, I was hooked from 7 on.
That's great.
Wow.
I went to Montessori school, and I went to like Montessori school. Grades 1 through 3 were all in one classroom, and there were like 30 kids. And grades 4 through 6 were all in one classroom. And my teacher, Glenn Jones, he was super into role playing games.
Name dropper over here.
Glenn Jones. he got me here. It's all for him. But we would make dioramas, and like that was how we used class time. We would paint figures, and then he would like create stories for us, and we would like play in school. Like this was like 6th grade for me.
Jesus.
We would play these like scenarios that he had laid out for us, and we would do it at recess too in our own world. And so, I mean, I guess that was my introduction to like improv and role playing. And then I didn't really do it for a while. And then I always wanted to play it, but I never knew anyone. I played like one game with some kids who are very D&D people, and it was like kind of fun, but they kind of hated me. Like I had a character I remember, and like they were like, it's raining now. I was like, ooh, my guy's like super jumpy. I'm scared of lightning and I'm not moving anymore. And they're like, come on, what are you doing? I was like, that's what I'm doing. You can't move. And it's like, all right, well, now we have to deal with this. And like they like strapped me to the back of someone, and I was like, I'm having fun. Is no one else having fun? Okay.
This makes so much sense.
Yeah. Well, then I didn't play for a little while again. And then like a group of comedians in Minnesota were playing a game and they were awesome and we played with them, but that was almost too much like not D&D. Like it was all jokes, but it was so much fun. Like I was crying laughing. We were just like, because the DM did take it pretty seriously and all the rest of the players did was just fuck with the stuff. I remember one time we spent like 10-15 minutes. There were some stairs and we just did as much as we could to go down the stairs. That's all it was. It was like, ooh, I'm grappling to the side. And then my other friend was like, I'm gonna It's not investigating, appraise. I'm appraising the stare. I want to know how much this stare is worth. It took forever to get down the stair, and the DM was so frustrated. But that was super fun. And then I came here, and I remember Carlos talking about doing a D&D thing. I was like, I want to do that. I miss it so much. And then he invited me to do this, and it was great.
Yeah, my intro to D&D. So. Growing up, I played a lot of magic, and then I stopped for a very long time, and I've always wanted to play D&D. It just looked so complicated that I was just like, well, there's no way I'm going to learn this. And then I know you need it, a lot of people, and you know, magic's like, you know, a two-player game. And so I had never played, and then I got into improv, and then I met Patrick, and he had mentioned that, I forgot how it happened, but you had mentioned that you're involved with games or some type of game thing with your podcast or something like that. And I was like, yeah, I always wanted to play D&D. And then you're like, yeah, we'll get a game going. And I thought it was just going to be like all talk, like, oh yeah, we'll get a game going. And then he did. It's not all talk. It's time to play a game. Yeah. He's like, you got a game going. I forgot. I think it was like me, you, Winnegar, who played, the original. Yeah. Chad before it's Chand or whatever. And who else? There was a fourth person. I forgot who that was.
I don't remember either.
It wasn't Matt Baker.
Was it Zach?
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
I don't think so. But we played like one game, and then I loved it. And a couple months later, we decided to start a podcast.
Yeah.
It was pretty much just that. I played one game, and I was like, yeah, okay, let's start a D&D podcast.
Well, we played together several times before the podcast, yeah. Right?
I think just one other time.
Right. I think I was there for that. I remember.
You were there for the That's when
the
I
second
met you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They
forgot to mention.
No, because we were kind of doing them as one shots. They weren't really a campaign, because we didn't expect anyone to be able to show up a second time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we had played. I had played Dungeons & Dragons two times before wanting to start this podcast, I think.
Cool.
Well, I guess generally I have had like always a imaginative life growing up. But then I had played a role-playing game once before, which was kind of my introduction to it. But then I didn't really play. I was always interested in doing D&D and had some friends that were doing some campaigns that I was probably going to jump on at some point. But then Carlos sent me a Facebook message one day and was like, you look like you like nerdy stuff. Want to be on this podcast?
Your
and
profile
I was like,
picture
mm-hmm.
was you with like elf ears or something like that.
Oh, yeah. From the Ren Fair.
Yeah. That's how we cast her.
Yeah. That's how
we
cast her.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, I knew a couple things. Like I knew she was on a Herald team. You were like, I met you outside Annoyance. So I was like, okay, she has.
Yeah. I met Carlos one time and a year later, I never talked to him again.
He's like Batman.
Later, he was like, you want to be on this Twitch stream? And I was like, yeah. I honestly also had like no idea what I said yes to.
I thought, when
I showed up, I was like, this is like a real studio. It wasn't here.
I don't know why I assumed that. I was just like, yeah, this girl. I think when I even pitched you to Pat, I was just like, yeah, she's probably got a I think I said like, yeah, she's got a background. This, blah, blah.
Oh my god.
Like, and then when you mentioned it, I was like, oh shit. Like you had mentioned, like I'd never played before. I was like, oh,
oops.
Okay, well, let's just try it. Let's see if it works, you know?
Oh, no.
It worked.
Yeah. Your gut has led us here, so.
Plus, it's always good to have a completely new character on one of these
always.
Shows because
oh, yeah.
it gives the audience 100%. Kind of that in, especially if they haven't played that system before.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also great, again, to make that new person a fighter because they can bust down every wall in their way anyway.
Yeah. Yep. That was something that I think like scared me in the beginning, because in the beginning you played the sorcerer. We were playing each other's character.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I honestly was not worried until you were like, I don't know if you should do this. I was like, oh, okay. I was really self-conscious.
We're a very supportive group of each other.
Yeah.
Well, we are. Like, yes. But I think it was like the building blocks to get to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there. I had a character that I scrapped right away.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Wait, what was your character?
The character was like a half snake, half person.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I forget
what
the name of that type of thing was, but I just like didn't like it because it was. I guess I mean, she was kind of like complacent. I guess.
Yeah.
Her character was very much like above everything. I hated playing it. I hated it. So I went with a weirdo like Daryl, and I really loved. I fell in love with him right away.
Yeah.
I love the different ideas we had coming in too, because I stayed as, you know, Bugfly. I think that was pretty consistent, but like the original iteration of her, she had a pet rat.
Oh yeah,
that was like her chief advisor, and like the whole personality was like she was this like noble who's been like fallen from grace, and now she's trying to like regain her nobility back, but like no, none of that, like stuck.
That's why the stuff of the Making New Friends podcast doesn't count as canon. Yeah. Right. It's legend.
It was a workshop.
We were totally just workshopping the show.
Yeah.
Next question.
Yeah.
Hey rats, I'm Joseph,
and I'm Patrick,
and we love you guys.
So our question was, what was your initial inspiration for each of your characters?
We love rats.
Hey, rats, we love you guys.
Yeah.
Our question is, what was your initial inspiration for every character?
You thought they introduced it by just being like, hey, we love rats.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's a cool way they talk about us.
Our
we
favorite
love the
animal
rats.
Is rats. Yeah. Oh, no. Rats. I mean, they said just hey rats. Yeah.
Well, I'll start.
What was the question? Wait, I'm sorry.
What was the initial inspiration for each of our characters? Well, which we kind of just said that we switched characters.
Yeah.
So that.
Mine was made.
No. But your attitudes and stuff. I mean, switching character sheets is not the same as developing a character.
I kind of knew that people didn't really. I don't know. It's like kind of hack to be a paladin. I feel like that's
whoa,
like kind
whoa,
of a
whoa.
Thing. Isn't that
that's
a thing?
That's a hot take. Why?
Wow. Is that? I don't know. I just like it. They feel like kind of like cheap characters. I don't know.
Cutouts, like cardboard cutouts.
Well, because they can be like very. I don't know, like strong. I don't know. I just like thought that
strong-willed, everyone independent.
Yeah, I just thought that everyone that hate is like, oh, you picked a paladin. Okay, well, a team full of paladins. Yeah, all right, great. Yeah, okay, great. They picked a paladin. Anyway, I didn't pick a paladin because I wanted to be a paladin. I just thought it was interesting to have a goblin as a paladin. And we were going through the what is the name of the
unlikely heroes?
The
module?
Unlikely hero. Yeah, we were going through those. And looking at all of them. And of course, I picked the one, the snake person thing, because I like reptiles. And like when I played Warhammer, I was the, I can't remember the name of the race. Did anyone play Warhammer here?
No, I didn't.
Can't remember. Anyway, I loved them, and they were the weirdest one. They were kind of like inspired by like Aztec races and stuff like that. And they're just like this weird, basically they're the worst one you could pick. Every other race of the, of the Warhammer world could like destroy them easily unless you played them right, which I never did because I was too young. But I love them, so I like the snake person thing. But then like picking Daryl or picking the Dust Goblin, I just liked that they were like these kind of rejected, emaciated, like even for goblins, like goblins hate them. It was, and I just like kind of liked that. And then taking that like character that's supposed to be so evil and making them a little more like sullen, but also like nice. They're kind of like, Daryl's not like a mean guy.
No,
he's just, you know, so he has that kind of background of rejection and hatred, but like he fought it by being like, we'll accept people. I don't know. I just kind of like the
juxtaposition
of like a paladin and a goblin together.
You're
like
bitter, but you're trying to do the right thing.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun. That's fun.
Well, I guess my for Rhoda, well, one, I just, now that I have her, I just want her to be stronger and stronger and stronger, because it's fun. And I think for my, like, character attributes, she's kind of an extension, I think, of myself and, like, my own insecurities like blown up in a caricature. And I knew going into like the start of this podcast that I was just like, I just want to be best friends with Bugfly. Partially because I thought it would be really fun, and also just because I feel like there's so many like games and improv teams where like, or scenes where like a lot of women get pitted against each other.
They fight.
I was just like, I don't want that at all. I want this to be like really positive and have like a really positive relationship. So I kind of made that like a key element to me of like, I'm going to make sure that this other chick is like the most dear person in the world. And now she is in real life too.
Yay. real quick before someone else goes, the name of the thing I couldn't remember is Lizardmen. I'm so mad at myself.
It's
just fucking Lizardmen.
Sounds like a good band.
Yeah, great. Great stuff. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, so to piggyback off of what Justine said about like creating like a strong like female friendship, that was something that was also important to me as a role player. But with Bugfly, I just made it from the beginning that she's going to be naturally sunny and naturally like wanting the care for everyone else. Because one, I didn't know everybody. So I wanted to make sure, like, I don't know, like I have a caretaker personality. So I figured that like bled through with Bugfly. But also like I love being excited about stuff. It's my favorite. So that's what, yeah, that's what I think.
I mean, Bellegarde's was incredibly simple. I honestly got, I mean, I didn't think this was going to last more than, I thought I was there for a day, right? So mm-hmm. when we were still doing the stream, so Bellegarde was just going to be a paladin that had a cat. And I had no plans to do Draglab. I had no plans for any part of it whatsoever. I literally was just going to be a half orc that was big and had a cat.
Love it.
Inspiring.
Until he grew from there.
Yeah.
But that was pretty
good. No, absolutely. But that's great. I mean, you had a very basic start, a good initiation, and then you build on it.
Because I was just there to fill in, remember? Because there was an open spot. And you guys needed someone last minute to fill in. So I was going to be there and be gone. And then it was like, well, we didn't quite get out of it. Can you come back next week? And I was like, sure. Okay. And then I just didn't leave.
I was legit afraid that you were going to replace me. I was like, gone for a month. I understand.
Oh, that's why
I agreed
he came.
To do this.
That's right.
Agreed to do it. And then I was like, fuck, I'm going to do this month long road trip. Ugh. And they're going to get the ball rolling. Like, I totally get it if they like just go with someone else. And then they're like talking about this Aram guy that was so great. And I was like, oh, fucking great.
Oh, no.
No, but then we all played together and that was fantastic. I was like, oh, good. I'm so glad I'm still a part of this.
Totally.
Originally, the first character that we came up with was the Dragonborn. And he was Crispy, the Dragonborn. And he was actually inspired by Patrick Winnegar. The first game that I ever played, Patrick Winnegar had played this real, like, not dopey. He wasn't dopey. He was just headstrong dwarf that would just, like, run into anything at any time. And I just loved how he played it. And I kept thinking, like, oh, man, that's so not in my bag. Like, that's not my natural, like, just rush in to danger type thing. I'm like, that'd be so fun to play. And then I played it and it kind of didn't feel, it felt unnatural a little bit playing. And then Justine was having a problem with her sorcerer, where she just never played a sorcerer before. And like, basically, we just swapped characters like completely. And like, I wanted to do this high pitched voice. Basically, Gilf is based off of two people, Wart from Over the Garden Wall. I don't know if you guys seen that.
Yes.
Yeah, Over the Garden Wall and Aziz Ansari.
What?
So it's like, like, imagine going into this endless dungeon with a warrior wart character who's also Aziz Ansari.
That's perfect.
Yeah, love that.
My voice was always Alan Rickman, but like a little more Muppety.
Yes.
Oh, 100%.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, well, I was inspired to do Rot by, I'm just kidding. I'm going to go through every character I've had to play.
Yeah, all your NPCs.
Yeah, the NPCs are either thought out and have a voice or they're Pat's voice because he hasn't thought about it. Let's do that last audio one.
Yeah, what's who was it again?
Lewis.
Yes.
Who we used. He's the one who submitted his friends to the dungeon, which I thought was a genius.
Oh, that was Lewis.
That was Lewis, okay. Yeah. Hey, I'm Lewis!
Yeah.
See, that's...
And I'm actually
a
nice
thought
guy.
Out NPC voice, just being friendly.
Hey, this is Lewis. That guy who sent in two encounters and kind of did an okay job. My main question for you guys was, how do you feel about reoccurring characters? Villains, good, bad, neutral? I've had a couple ideas for encounters for the game for a while, and just wanted to get some feedback before I submitted everything. I know I spoke to Carlos through email for a little bit, and he said you guys enjoyed the movie theater episode. Just give me some feedback before I start submitting these things. All right. Thanks for all that you do. Bye.
Okay, I'm going to start with this. Lewis, if you submit yourself to the dungeon again, it's not as clever this time. But as far as reoccurring characters, it's a world. So yes, they exist. They can come back.
I love, love, love reoccurring characters. So I'm like a relationship nerd. I have like lists of how I feel about people. And so I like will just like jot down. I think it's not in this one, but it's essentially like Bugfly's burn book. Like, who, like how I feel about each NPC. And then so hoping that I would see them again.
And I think to maybe making an assumption about what Lewis is asking, I don't think in the submissions you get to decide what a recurring character is. It's Pat's decision. Like you've taken characters that were not necessarily, like, it's not about like writing like this guy is going to be super involved in their life or anything like that. I mean, you can say that, it's all up to you, but like you've taken characters that were not that way and made them a part of the world in more of a way than like the cheese monster or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and a lot of that too is players' choices. Like, I can't, if you guys decided to befriend the cheese golem, then rad. Now you're friends with this stinky cheese guy who makes you fart. I don't expect you to, but you have done many things I don't expect. So, okay, let's do one more. This is from Thomas Fumo. What is the best, coolest, most interesting thing Bugfly has ever stolen?
I mean, it's definitely, that's a spoiler thing. Okay.
I have one.
Okay.
Can I answer
Yes,
it?
Please.
Tell me what you think, because it hasn't come up yet. She stole the...
That's what I was going to say.
That's what I was going to say.
Is that a spoiler? Fuck.
No, it's not.
Because this is going to come out before the season finale.
Yeah, it hasn't come out yet.
Fuck. Oh, that. Delete this.
Yeah.
Because it's such a bad ass thing.
Edit.
Okay.
God damn it. Because it's so cool.
It's so cool. Yeah.
Bugfly stole something awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. One thing that is, I think it has come out that I think is cool is I stole a mushroom that has Antolio Licolai's blood on it. I don't know what that means, but
that
I think
that has come out.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she stole it from the podium.
Yeah, and he was gonna do a spell on it. So now I correlate mushroom with blood, and something happens.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, Rhoda, what's your favorite weapon?
My favorite weapon is, I have two. This is one, and this is one.
She's holding up her arms.
Yes. Because I can just rip anything apart.
I think that's perfect.
I mean, that's the thing about Rhoda that I loved early is she ripped the heads off of everything.
Yeah.
If you listen back to those episodes, because everyone's stabbing, and there's tons of like audio that I can throw in, sound effects I can throw in for like stabbing and flesh and whatever, but I actually had to build audio for what it sounds like when you rip the jaw off a shark. And I can't remember everything that's in it. It's a combination of like, I think someone chewing bubble gum and some other like hard sounds, but there's definitely a shaving cream sound in there. It's supposed to be the tearing sound, like,
that's great.
And then it pops.
I love it.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you to everybody who submitted a question. We really appreciate it. I know we didn't get to all of them. We thought that this wouldn't be enough questions to fill an hour, and we've gone over that. So we're not good at time. But thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Thank you to all of you guys for taking the time to answer them.
Yeah. Thank you.
I feel like it should be bigger than that. It would be like, okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much.
Hey, I just want to say thanks so much.
And remember.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, you can't just say, just fucking do it. Just
a cheerleader always gets the last word.
The last word.
The last word. Oh, there's multiple rots.
No, so much rot.
It's rotten.
Okay.
No. Wow. Cut that.
Hey Guardians, Pat here, and thank you so much for listening to our mailbag episode. Before we get out of here, there were a couple of things I wanted to make sure to mention. First, and most important, in 2 weeks, the season one finale of the Dungeon Rats is gonna drop, and everything you think you know about the Kingdom of Naporia will forever change. Two, and most important, on September 19th, four members of the Dungeon Rats and our new friend Gwen Agnew are going to drop something very special into the Dungeon Rats feed. And that's the playthrough that we got to do of Tomb of Annihilation. And all I can say is that it is the start of something really cool and something that we hint at quite a bit during this mailbag episode. So if you listen closely, you might know about what is happening in the near future. And third, and most important, thank you. for everything. The submissions, the reviews, the tweets, everything. It's thanks to you that this show is even possible. And without you, it would be an empty dungeon. So thank you. And I can't wait to show you what happens in season 2.